exited the lab. They ushered the others down the tunnel and around the corner as the Plasex detonated in the lab. Bringing down the walls and ceiling of the side room, burying the corpses of the experiments.
Some of those children were from the Ville. She and Harvey must have been taking children, experimenting on them.
How come we never knew? I mean, it ain't that big a place, right?
I believe I may be able to offer a possible solution. The Sun children have always taken children that strayed to the outside. What better cover for Jenna and Harvey to abduct children? Then, when they had finished with them, they turned them loose on the outside, where they did actually become victims of Samtpople.
Blake shook his head in disbelief.
Phew. I thought I knew that bastard.
Throughout history, man has had an almost boundless capacity for deception and savagery. There are some things, friend Blake, that never change.
Doc pursed his lips, an expression of infinite regret crossing his brow. Ryan tried to bring matters back to a practical level.
That may be, but what we've got to worry about now is what sort of a reception we're heading back to. Stay triple red, friends.
As if in answer, the sounds of a pitched battle began to reach their ears. It had taken Harvey only a few moments to note into the crowd. Despite the doubts voiced, the Sec Chief had his followers, as did the Baron's wife. There were those who had often wondered if the Ville would prosper more under a firmer hand. Alien was, in their view, too nice to be a Baron. He lacked the ruthless and sadistic streak that kept people in line, people like themselves. And so they had harbored, some openly and some in secret, the view that the steely Sec Chief and Jenna would make a better team. There was something about Jenna. No one but Harvey knew the extent of her experiments and her evil, but she had an aura that some could sense, and this made them respect and fear her. And fear was what they wanted. It was what drove them and led them. So it was that there were hands to cover them as they both tried to hide themselves in the uproar that followed the exit of Alien, Ryan, the Secmen, and the Companions. Was this just a trick to buy them time, to chill the Baron and take control? Or was it true that Jenna and Harvey had contrived to keep such experiments secret? After the raid on Samtvogel, and the sudden and shocking end of years of relatively peaceful existence, the confusion among the inhabitants of Raw was immense. In the main hall, people argued and started to get heated, pushing and hitting out. Tempers flared, and the temperature raised.
Boss, this way, and quick!
Harvey, grabbing behind him for Jenna's hand and trying to keep her close, heard the voice loud and urgent to his left. Looking up and across, he could see Bodhi pushing through the packed mass of humanity, using the butt of his snub-nosed blaster as a club to hammer down on the necks and skulls of those who would block his path. Considering the frayed atmosphere and the confusion, Harvey was more than glad that only his sec force, by habit as much as enforcement, carried blasters on a day-to-day basis. At least no one was going to take a shot at him.
Let's get the hell out of here. Regroup. Get the boys together.
They ain't all gonna come with you, boss.
Don't matter. That stoop alien is out of here right now with Cyclops and his goons. That gives us time to rally those good old boys who'll stay the course.
Bodhi grinned, savage and humorless.
Okay, boss. Follow me.
The fat sec man chopped them a path out into the Ville. Most of the people inside were too busy fighting one another to try to get out, and those that did found themselves hemmed in by the sec men at the sole entrance. The two men carried long blasters, which they held across their bodies, using the whip-thin barrels as weapons, not wasting ammo as they hit anyone trying to get out. Anyone that was, except Bodhi, Harvey, and Jenna.
Bodhi, stay here while I round up our forces. Any sec who go against you, they ain't with us, so chill the fuckers.
You mean our own troops?
Harvey fixed him with a glare.
Son, if they ain't with us, then they're the enemy. Understood?
Not waiting for an answer, he turned on his heel and rapidly sped toward the armory. The first step would be to secure all weapons for his force alone. Ant and Dee stood in the center of the fray, possibly the only two people who remained calm. The dreadlocked twins still carried their battered shotguns, cleaner than at any time in the past, but showing the scars of use and misuse. Ant raised his, looking at it with a shadow of regret crossing his face.
Looks like we're gonna need these again, bro, and sooner than I would have liked.
His twin returned the look, gazing at his own weapon with sadness.
Sure looks so. You reckon that one-eyed dude and his boy are right, or should we go with Harv?
Aunt gave his twin a look of disbelief mixed with disgust.
You kidding?
Harv hates anything and anyone except himself and maybe that weird bitch. Think we got any chance of a good life with him as big boss? Yeah, like fuck. Then let's get to it, dude.
And with a cry that sounded as one, both twins let out a blood-curdling shriek, turning in opposite directions, waving their blasters and cutting themselves a swath through the crowd until they reached the exit, where they came up against Bodhi blocking their path.
Where are you going, boys? Who are you with?
What do you think?
It was a neutral question. It elicited exactly the kind of response they both wanted.
Not bad for a pair of blacks. I knew you'd be good old boys and side with us. We'll make the new order work.
Ant and Dee exchanged the briefest of glances before moving as one with the speed of a striking rattler. Their powerful arms pumped, using the stocks of their respective blasters as baseball bats, coming from the level of their elbows in an upward arc that caught the Sec Man under his chin, jawbone shattering on impact as Bodhi crumpled into an unconscious heap, not having time to respond to the attack.
Never did like that fat ass, bro. Yeah, even the best of places get insects. Figure we should find Carter and the Baron. Reckon Blake and Downey will be with us, if no one else. Yeah, they're good people. But where the fuck are they going? Shit, you got the one flaw in my plan, dude.
With the Sec Guard now rendered ineffective, the fighting in the main hall spilled out into the tunnels and passages of the Ville. Men and women who had peacefully coexisted in the enclosed Ville all their lives now found that they hardly knew their neighbor at all. Those Secmen who were still loyal to Alien tried in vain to calm the crowd and prevent the violence and conflict, but they were outnumbered both by the crowd and those Secmen who wanted to stick with Harvey. It wasn't long before the crowd had separated into two distinct forces, and lines of demarcation were drawn up in the Ville as each side took whatever cover it could, using whatever came to hand as weapons to augment the few Sec blasters. It was clear that whoever controlled the armory would win the war, something Harvey was already attending to.
Hey, Harv! What the hell are you doing here, you rad-blasted gaudy spawn?
The chief armorer had elected to miss the meeting in the main hall, figuring that her presence wouldn't make much difference. And someone had to clean and stockpile the blasters, grens, and plasecs after the raid on Sompvogel. It would be a lengthy task, and she figured that the sooner she got to it, the better. Besides, she'd taken a liking to J.B. Dix, and had the feeling that his people would be hitting trouble. It made her feel uneasy, and she felt happier with complex but inanimate pieces of metal than she did with complex but animate human beings. She had been in the middle of stripping one of the RPKs when Harvey and Jenna burst in on her. It was hard to know who was the more surprised. Harvey had truly believed that everyone was in the main hall, and that he would find the armory empty. The chief armorer had no idea what to make of the Sec chief and the Baron's wife bursting in on her, wild-eyed and looking for all the world as though they were about to commit mass murder. Which, of course, was their very intention. Harvey stopped dead, staring at her, and then, without another word, took the Uzi from its wall mounting, grabbed spare ammo from the carefully labeled and stored boxes, and tossed it to Jenna. When he ignored her, Donna repeated her question. But this time, suspicions aroused that something was very much amiss and that she'd have no choice but to get involved, she left the RPK and reached slowly and stealthily for her own personal blaster, the Springfield-loaded 1911 that she kept secured in the waistband of her old camo pants. They were faded and patched, but she kept them because of the special loop she had sewn into the back. Stitched time and again until it held the Springfield perfectly balanced, it made her pants almost a second skin. And she didn't feel comfortable unless she could feel the Cocobolo grip's texture nesting against the base of her spine. Her fingers snaked around the lightweight match trigger while the palm of her hand flattened against the high hand grip. The flat mainspring housing meant that the blaster nestled into her plump body just about as unobtrusively as it was possible to get, and she was careful to move with a slow and easy motion, so it would appear just as though she were scratching an itch. Harvey looked at her.
Donna, don't do this.
Do what, Harv? And don't fuck with my blasters. They ain't cleaned yet, not all of them.
Harvey smiled despite himself. He had always thought her dedication to the hardware was a little weird, and maybe she was only pissed at him for messing with it. In which case, he wouldn't have to chill her.
Listen to me, Donna. The time has come to decide which side you're on.
Her finger was still on the trigger, the grip still nestled into her palm, but she stayed any movement.
Side, Harv? What sides do you mean? We're one people, right?
No, Donna. It ain't that simple.